Hello, Ursula McTaggart. Welcome to KVU.
Hi, Bill. It's nice to be here.
Ursula McTaggart teaches English at Wilmington College, a small liberal arts college, Quaker in origin, in Wilmington, Ohio. She writes a good deal, including a recent book, Gorillas in the Industrial Jungle, Radicalism's Primitive and Industrial Rhetoric. During the pandemic, she's been teaching her college classes while also at home mothering and co-teaching her two children. This experience led to doing some reading and research and lots of conversation with friends in the same position and gave rise to her most recent article in the journal Against the Current. It's called Motherhood and Work in the Pandemic. In that article, Ursula McTaggart discusses first the intense dilemmas and troubles COVID has created for mothers, and especially in this country, especially those with little help and low income. And second, the article explores what should and could be done in the continuing pandemic as to income support and schooling and the structure of work. So, Ursula, let's start with the dilemmas and troubles. Not so many fulfillments of motherhood and work in the continuing pandemic.
I think that the pandemic has been a crisis for everyone, of course, but it has heightened inequalities in all sorts of situations, and one of those is gender inequalities. I don't want to diminish the other inequalities, racial inequalities, economic inequalities that it has also heightened. But thinking about within the home, the way that the pandemic has specifically affected mothers has been something that I've focused on recently. We already live in a society that prioritizes men's jobs over their domestic duties, and women are expected to make their careers bend to fulfill their domestic duties. The pandemic has intensified those gender inequalities. And I think that's because, on the whole, men don't feel that childcare and homeschooling are their primary responsibilities. This is true on a statistical level, a structural level, but I think it's also true on an individual level, even for many men who consider themselves feminists or leftists. Women do daily domestic labor that is often invisible to men or appears unnecessary to men, and men often prioritize their own paid labor over domestic tasks. And as a result, it's the women who end up managing those domestic tasks. I think that in the pandemic, what happened is that one day, many people suddenly were at home. So for people who were essential workers, what it meant is that their children were at home and they still had to go to work. For people who had white-collar jobs or other jobs that went online, it meant that the entire family was home. And now there were 40-hour-a-week jobs that had to be done online, and children who needed to do homeschool all day online. And this has been going on for a year. So I think that the trouble for women, both those who work outside of the home during the pandemic and those who are working from home, has been that childcare systems, whether that was the public schools or whether that was a daycare, have been stripped away, and children's care needs as well as their schooling needs suddenly need to be met by their parents at the same time that their parents are doing 40-hour-a-week jobs or more, of course. And that work has fallen on the whole to women. Not that men haven't been participating in it as well, but when we look at the stats of who's doing the majority of that homeschooling work, women are bearing the lion's share of the burden.
Yeah, and for people who are single or who don't have a partner involved, it's completely backbreaking, it seems to me, and an impossible set of burdens. An 80-hour week just can't continue. But even a 65-hour week with very little time to relax, it seems to me, becomes sort of unbearable. The intensification of overwork is now becoming clear. My sense is that people won't return to it. Tell us how it is to always be juggling your work responsibilities and the responsibilities to young children who often don't have the capacity to sort of understand the dilemmas that their parents are facing.
So for me, both my children went back to school in person in in September, and I also went back to teaching in person last September. To be honest, that's been good for all of us. It's been a much more normal. When we were all at home, I am divorced and on my own with the kids 65% of the time, which was 3 work days a week. And my kids were in 3rd grade and kindergarten at the time. It literally entailed setting them up downstairs, watching a television show or playing a video game, and then going up and shutting the door in my bedroom and teaching a class on Zoom, hoping that they didn't interrupt me, which sometimes they did. Sometimes they would bang on the door. Sometimes they would walk in. Sometimes toys would fly across the room and hit me while I'm talking. Most of the time, they're old enough that they would just watch their show for hours and hours a day, which isn't how I would normally like to parent, but that was my babysitter. And then when I was not teaching classes, I was getting them onto their Zoom classes or monitoring them while they did their homework, which was always its own challenge. So trying to do prep work for class or grading papers for class was something that had to move into the evenings after they went to bed or on days when they were with their dad. Because when I wasn't teaching on a Zoom class, I was parenting. I didn't have a lot of time to say to them, you need to entertain yourselves now while I grade 20 papers. They're young enough that they need a lot of supervision. That said, they're also old enough that I could set them up with a show and have them be occupied for an hour. I can't even imagine what it was like for people with infants and toddlers who literally cannot be entertained for an hour while you teach, or you would have to hold them. There were certain cases I can imagine would be just impossibilities. If I were a single mom of a 2-year-old trying to teach a Zoom class, I don't honestly know if that could be done without just involving the toddler in the Zoom class. Like I said, I went back to teaching in September in person, and that actually made my life a lot more sane. But many people I know have been doing this dance for an entire year now.
It must be very debilitating for them in a lot of ways, exhausting, but also for conscientious people, at least, who value their work and recognize that it's important. It's one thing we've recognized in this pandemic. People who do humble things are often the ones who are keeping the society operating and have skills that we've never appreciated. My guess is that people in the position of working full days every day and trying to juggle the responsibilities, they begin to feel that they're not really doing justice to either.
Yes, it's not possible to do good childcare and good work at your place of employment at the same time. It's just not. you do both of them poorly. Your kids watch hours and hours of television. You know, they run around unsupervised, and you're not playing with them, you're not reading to them, you're not doing all of the things that are lovely to do with children, crafts and sledding and whatever else is fun for them. You're not doing that the way that you would if you were primarily devoted to childcare. For me, at my job, I'm not giving my students as much feedback and attention to prepping classes as I would be if I weren't also doing childcare at the same time. So, absolutely. I think that for me, in the early days of the pandemic, there was some grace from everyone, which is that we're in a crisis, and as a result, everything is going to be done a little more poorly. Teachers weren't expecting as much from students in elementary school and just saying, oh, do what you can. And the same thing for me as an employee, there was a sense that, well, you've been thrown into this at a moment's notice. It doesn't have to be perfect. But I think that by September, employers had decided to crack down and say, you may be doing this from home, but we do expect that you do the exact same level of performance that you were doing before. And elementary school teachers have been given the message, you need to be expecting just as much of your students. You need to be doing as much teaching in the same way, whether you're in person or whether you're on Zoom. I understand why that happened, both from a capitalist perspective of employers wanting to extract as much work as they can from their employees, and also just on a social perspective that it's hard to live in a state of crisis for an entire year and not get anything done. But the fact is that the situation hadn't changed for many parents. Now, teachers expected more of their elementary age students and their employers expected more of them, but they were still trying to do both jobs at the same time. And it's just been extremely unsustainable, and people are having mental health crises and are in a state of complete exhaustion at this stage.
Hi, folks. Bill Resnick here for KBOO 90.7 FM and our Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Ursula McTaggart, who teaches English at Wilmington College in Wilmington, Ohio. She's the principal caretaker and teacher for her two children at home during the pandemic. We've been discussing the intense dilemmas and troubles that COVID has created for mothers, especially those with little help and low income. That's, of course, the result of the way U.S. political and economic elites have responded to the pandemic. So, Ursula McTaggart, you concluded your article, Motherhood and Labor in the Pandemic, with several observations. For one, that the pandemic has demanded the changes in daily life that have forced not just mothers, but a considerable segment of the population to, for one, see the world differently, and secondly, envision radically democratic possibilities. So how did you come to those conclusions? And then what do you see as necessary changes in work and income and schooling?
So I think there are things that we can grasp from the experience of the pandemic and take forward with us. The first thing is the knowledge that change can happen overnight. I think that people who advocate big change, like socialists, are often told, oh, these things are very entrenched. You can't just change things overnight. But March 13th of 2020, the world did change overnight. We saw people change the entire way they organized their lives and their work worlds. And I think we should be inspired by that. It was because we had a crisis, but we can also change overnight for many reasons. We can change overnight because we want to, because it is in the interest of justice to change overnight. I think another thing the pandemic has taught us is that teachers and caregivers are some of the most important people in society, and that we need to reward them as such. We need to prioritize their needs, and we need to prioritize the work that they do. That includes prioritizing things like in-person teaching. I think that higher education, where I work for many years, has pushed people towards more and more online teaching as a way to make more money. And now we know how to do online teaching, but I think what we've learned is that it can work in a pinch, but it's certainly not as good. People want to be in person with teachers. Teachers have valuable things to give them in in-person settings. So I think we should remember the value of all of those things moving forward, of in-person teaching and of caregiving and teaching in general. I think that what we could have done but didn't, but we could still do going forward if we were willing to radically reimagine things in a democratic way, is to think about really funding and prioritizing what matters in this society. We decided that we were going to prioritize capitalism in the pandemic, that instead of mass government bailouts for everyone and everything, so that everything could shut down long enough for everyone to be safe, so that small businesses didn't have to go under if they weren't serving people in bars and restaurants in person, so that higher education felt like it could come out alive if it didn't force students to come back into dorm living in the fall. We should have, as a society, bailed all of those businesses out enough that they could survive the pandemic without requiring people to do dangerous things. And we should have put all of our resources into bringing back caregiving and in-person K through 12 teaching safely as soon as possible. By safely, I mean we could have worked on radically reducing class sizes, hiring masses and masses of new teachers so that we could have very small pods of students being taught masked outside during the fall, maybe with breaks for online teaching in the wintertime. We could have compensated teachers much more for the work that they're doing to encourage them to come into these kinds of positions. We could have made sure that school buildings were safe, had the ventilation that they needed, that people had the space that they needed. Obviously, infrastructure doesn't change overnight, but I think this was an opportunity to get moving on changing the infrastructure that we need to have schools with smaller class sizes. Smaller class sizes would have been healthy for COVID. They're also healthy for the future. Pedagogical research tells us that 15-person classes are ideal at all ages. My children have 25-person classes. Some school systems have 40-person classes. This is not the way we should be educating our kids in any circumstance. Why not say now, today, in a pandemic, is the time when we really decide to reduce class sizes? We could have done that. It would have taken a lot of money. It would have taken a big push from states and the federal government. But I think these are the kinds of things that we could have prioritized in the pandemic that would have benefited us going forward as well. And last, I will say, I think we needed income support and alternative childcare support for people who didn't feel comfortable sending their kids back to in-person schooling throughout the pandemic. Depending on your employment situation, you may have been facing a situation where you had to send your children to in-person school or you had to send your children to in-person daycare, even if you didn't feel comfortable with that. We needed more options for people to make choices that were safe or that they felt were safe. Obviously, there's concern about government spending, but I think that other countries around the world have been much more open to seeing this as kind of the epitome of a crisis where we need government spending to get out of it. It is our path out, and we did it a little bit with the CARES Act, and there were some good provisions in there that helped, but we didn't take it nearly far enough.
Ursula McTaggart, thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here.